You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Open the door to huge savings now at Menards. Enhance the appearance of your home with a new stylish garage door. Choose from our large in-stock selection of ideal garage doors or design your own using our free garage door designer in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on ideal garage doors. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, welcome to the fifth series of I Never Thought It Would Happen, in partnership with Help Musicians. I'm Chris Difford, and on the very first episode, I'm going to be sharing the screen with one of rock's best and biggest selling artists. He's had one of the biggest singles ever, he's sold millions and millions of albums, he's duetted with Elton John, Pavarotti, Tina Turner, Sting, Rod Stewart, not me unfortunately. He's also a highly sought after photographer. He's so extremely talented, and I can't wait to talk to him, and you will see what a wonderful man he is, Mr. Bryan Adams. You look beautiful, by the way.
Well, I think we've got the same optometrist.
Where are you, Mr. Adams?
I'm in between Vancouver, England, and touring, looking after my 97-year-old mother.
Wow, that's incredible. How is she?
Remarkable. I can't believe she's still going. It's amazing.
It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, as I get older and I think about my mother's age before she left the world, I think, God, you know, how incredible to live such a long age and to feed off the world for as long as that.
Yeah, it's amazing. She's a marvel. I was thinking about what it is that sort of has kept her in such good humor as well, and that I'm sure that it's got to do with not reliving the past and only thinking about today. She only thinks about what's happening today, and that's it.
That's a lesson for us all, I think.
I agree.
You know, when I look back at my musical career, I don't want to go there. I just want to be today and tomorrow.
I saw you play in Calgary once.
You did? Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a long, long time ago. Whoa. Early 80s.
Yeah, it would have been. We did a big tour of Canada, which we went right across the top and played almost everywhere. It was an extraordinary tour, considering we were all in the back of a van with all the amps and all the drums and everything. Have you done a similar kind of tour?
Many times. I feel like I'm still doing it.
You're not in the back of a van, though. Come on.
I know, but I'm in the back of something.
Yeah. When you started out being in a band, I'm sure you felt the same excitement as I did. And did you think that you'd still be doing it when you passed like 20 years old?
You've got no way of really thinking that far ahead. Perhaps I'm a bit like my mother in that I really only thought about what was happening on the day.
Yeah,
there's no way of ever thinking you're going to get to anything more than what you're at that particular time. There was hints that things were going well, and but how long that would last for, who knew?
Yeah, I remember reading about the Rolling Stones when I was 14 and thinking, they're not going to last.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd never thought that about them, but there was different genres of hairstyles that I thought were definitely going to go with bands.
Yeah, definitely.
I used to get ribbed quite a bit about having short hair. You know, it's like, and then I went full military, and then that, I think that was it. There was grunge, and then there was me in the full crew cut, you know?
Yeah, I remember that completely.
Mm. Well, how's life? It looks like you've got a lovely place there. Is that your living room?
No, this is my study. This is where I write. And do you have a room that you write in, and are you disciplined?
I try not to be. I think it's better to be sort of able to just go and do it wherever you can, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There are places I'd like to be to do it. Usually somewhere warm.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you find that songs come to you, or do you chase them?
Both. I usually come up with a chorus or something and then sit on it for a bit. But usually something has to inspire me, like I'll have to be thinking about something or other to get an idea going.
Yeah. What was it like when you were writing with Jim Vallance? Was it? Did you sort of share the load, as it were?
Well, we were grafters in that we would sit in a room and put on a drum loop and just work and work and work and work that groove until we found something that fit the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back early days, we would make tape loops where we would have a pencil and the tape would go along, and then it would go to the tape machine and then round the pencil.
Okay.
Jim was a drummer, so he would set up a groove.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd splice it and make a tape loop and play to that. That was all pre-drum machine. Then, of course, the Lindrum came.
Yeah.
That changed everything. So, yeah. But, no, we were just proper grafters. We would just work until we got something that sounded like a song.
Yeah.
Many times we would just record and just go back and review it later. Jim was good at reviewing stuff.
Right. But, you know, when you went from writing your own songs, as it were, to working on a musical, for instance, did you find that a different chemistry?
Well, that's sort of songwriting by committee.
Ah.
Because every time you come, have you ever written a musical?
Interestingly, I've just finished working on one with Jules Holland, yes.
Oh, excellent. Well, so you know the process.
Yeah.
So with the musical that we wrote, Pretty Woman, there was the director and the writer and the producer and all the rest of the team. And so every time we'd come up with a song, we would have to sit at this committee meeting and just say, okay, look, you know, this is a song we think fits this particular story part and the narrative here. And then sometimes we'd get it and sometimes we wouldn't, or sometimes we'd get half of it and sometimes we wouldn't. And sometimes we'd just get another idea from that meeting and go and have to rewrite it. You know, for whatever, I think there's 20-something songs on the thing. There was probably 40 written.
Yeah, we were lucky enough that, well, as a lyricist, I was lucky because I was told, or it was expressed that I could use as much of the script as I needed to, so I could get lines from the script. So I mentored and held the hand of the writer. So lyrically, I could sort of bend back and forth, and that was quite good fun. And it was the first time for years that I'd stood around a piano writing. It was very old-fashioned. It was lovely.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed the experience. I would do it again. In fact, I'm about to do it again.
Ah.
And it's all very early days still, but I came up with an idea for an animated film and presented it to a company who likes it, and so we're going to get into the writing stages of it now.
Is that a co-write or something just that you'll do yourself?
It will be a co-write, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm better as a team player.
Yeah.
Yeah, I quite enjoy that, like, and then it's less pressure.
Yeah, I feel that as a, it's like when I'm writing with Glenn or I'm writing with someone, I'll just send lyrics and then that is half the job done.
And how is Glenn?
Glenn is out with Daryl Hall, so he's supporting him and joining him on stage singing, and I can imagine it would be amazing.
Huh.
Yeah.
And how come you're not doing that?
I'm going to go out with John Oates.
Oh, excellent.
Oh. Oh, God. It's very funny. When I heard that Glenn was doing that, I was like, yeah, that's an incredible match, you know. So I emailed John Oates and I said, hey, you know.
Did you?
Yeah, I emailed him and I said, hey, you know, Glenn's out with Daryl. I'd love to go out with you and, you know, I can play some songs and do my stand-up.
Oh, you were and actually serious?
I was serious, yeah. And he said, I'd love to do that. There's just not enough money in the pot. And I said, I'd do it for nothing. It'd just be fun, you know.
That is funny. It's also very funny.
Yeah. Maybe if he comes to the UK, I could do it. I don't know. We'll see. Do you have any instruments that from your teenage years that you still keep?
Oh, yeah.
What have you got?
Well, when I was 12, I went to visit my uncle in Reading and told him that I wanted to buy an electric guitar. And he took me down to the shop, a music shop in Reading, and I still have that electric guitar.
Great. What is it?
It's an Italian thing.
Mm.
Can't remember the name of it. It's an imitation Stratocaster.
Yeah, yeah.
And the story was, at that particular time, my father was working for the Canadian Embassy, and we were posted around the world, Portugal, Austria. Then we got posted to Israel, and we spent a year there. And I took my guitar with me there. Mm-hmm. But when we left, I left the guitar there, and I gave it to my next-door neighbor.
Wow.
When I got back to Canada, I bought another one. But I was like, oh, why did I do that? But anyway, I got a random email from somebody saying, hey, I have your guitar from 1970. Do you want it back?
Great.
And I was like, whoa, yeah, of course I want it back. Thank you. And then I never heard anything more about it.
No.
And then so 10 years after that email, I'm in a club in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
Guy walked up to me and he said, Brian, yeah. He says, I have your guitar. I said, what? He goes, I have the guitar from your childhood. He says, give me your address and I'll send it to you. And I said, well, wait a minute. Are you the guy that wrote to me back in 94? And he said, no, but I'm his friend. He died in a plane crash.
No.
And left it to me. And now he told me that he was going to give it to you. And oh. So it came back to me.
Oh, God, I could cry hearing that story.
It's a stupid story, but I mean, it's what happened. And so I've got it. I got it back.
What a beautiful, beautiful thing. Wow.
Running old world.
Yeah. Those early instruments are the most important, I think. We really bond with them and learn to make mistakes.
Yeah, I tried playing it a few times, but I think it's been modified in the neck because the strings are about that high off the neck. Mm-hmm. So I haven't bothered to set it up again. It's just there.
Yeah.
It's just a piece of history.
Yeah. You're an ambassador of Help Musicians. How did you get to meet them, as it were?
I always sort of thought that was a good idea because Bonnie Raitt was, I think, the first person to introduce me to this. There's an organization in America that does a similar thing.
Ah.
I just thought, this is a great idea. There's probably loads of musicians out there that have just, you know, come on hard times, and why not support your own?
Mm. Well, it's a great thing. Just last week, I was hosting a songwriting workshop for a week for 15 young people that have they're on hard times, and it was the most uplifting experience I've had in a whole year. It was the most beautiful thing.
That's cool.
It was only paid for by Help Musicians because they have people donating to their fund, which is just incredible, really. During the pandemic, it was the lifesaver for many people.
Mm-hmm.
What was the lifesaver for you at that point?
At the pandemic?
Yeah.
The obvious one, that I had a family, you know, that I had kids and we could all hang out. It was the best time for us as a family because I couldn't go anywhere. And so I had to be with them, and that was great. It was my lifesaver.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember interviewing Sting, and he said that his suitcase is always in the hall, ready to get in the back of a car. But he said during the pandemic, it just stayed in the hall. And it was just like you said, it was great to be with the kids and the wife, you know.
Mm. I actually had convinced myself that I wasn't going to work again.
Wow.
And that pandemic had just kiboshed it for all musicians, because they were talking about, oh, yeah, you can't put people together in a place, you know, loads of people can't get together. And so that means we're done.
Mm.
And then we did a show in Portugal and everyone was wearing masks. I've got a photograph of it somewhere. And it was the strangest thing, because the sound isn't the same, mm-hmm. but when you scream through a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you get multiple people screaming through masks, it's a different sound. It's kind of a muted.
Yes, it is. I remember it, yeah.
We all learned a lesson about that whole thing. The world learned a lesson from that pandemic. And I'm not sure if it happened again, if we would all react the same way.
What do you mean by that? What do you think would happen?
I don't know that we'd ever be able to get people to lock down like that again.
I see, yeah. So it would be worse in a way.
Hard to say. Mm. Hard to say. I just don't know that people would be as compliant as they were this time.
No, we don't want to go back there.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. Hi, I'm Chris Difford, and you're listening to I Never Thought It Would Happen. Coming up next, I'm answering your questions, and I can't wait to read your emails.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Hi there. As promised, I'm going to be answering any questions you may send me on any music-related topics that you'd like a little help with, or just some general advice. I'm not a counsellor, but I'm here to help. I'm going to start with an audio message from Chris Cleverly.
Hi there, it's Chris Cleverly here, dream folk songwriter and guitarist. Help Musicians has been such a massive part of my musical journey and career over the last few years, supporting me with funding for touring, developing new skills, mentoring within the industry, and this year offering me to join in Chris Difford's fantastic songwriting week in Somerset, and help me to ultimately become a much better, much more confident musician. I would love to ask you, Chris, during a standard song cycle or record, do you naturally tend to land on, say, 11 or 12 fully formed ideas that make the final cut? Or do you tend to be working from a much broader pool of, you know, 20 to 30 songs and then whittle it down to the album lineup that you think is the best representation of that period of work?
Well, it's an interesting conversation, really, because swings and roundabouts in many ways. Working with Squeeze, we tend to just develop the songs that sound great when we're rehearsing them. So it's probably like a 12-song, 16-song cycle at the very most. When I'm working on my own, I'm writing constantly. And for my most recent album, I've had the good luck, I suppose, of being able to write quite a lot of songs. I'd say about 20. And it's very difficult to whittle them down. So I'm going to put them all out there and see what happens. So yeah, don't make it such a serious question. Just go with the ones that you feel you should go with. Thanks, Chris. This is from Paul in Austin, Texas. How much thought is there in the sequencing and what factors are involved in that process? All the best. Well, Paul, I think you're talking about sequencing of putting a set together, for instance. And I would say that Glenn in Squeeze does most of this work, and he does a fantastic job of figuring out where the songs should fall and rise. Because it is like writing a play in some... You've got to keep people entertained, but you've got to keep people focused on your songs. So it's pretty much a job for one person, sometimes sharing with another. So Paul, I hope that answers your question. So there you go, our first foray into this new feature. Anyone listening, you are more than welcome to send me a question, either written or you can record one. But make sure you send them to chris@helpmusicians.org.uk. That's chris@helpmusicians.org.uk. Thank you so much. I can't wait to see the questions you're going to ask. And I can't wait to fathom out how I'm going to answer them. So touring for you, you seem to be engaged in touring quite a lot of the year. And your energy on stage is extraordinary.
You think?
How do you keep the well-being of yourself and the band tight so that you can do that every night?
Well, well-being doesn't start with the band. It starts with you and how you take care of yourself, obviously. We're not drinkers, so that's one good thing.
Great.
And so I think try and pace it so that it's comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And... you just try and make travel as comfortable as possible. And it's more or less, it's a laugh to be out on tour. So, you know, it's hard to not love it.
Yeah. I mean, touring's, for me, as I get older anyway, I find it harder because we have to do longer tours to make ends meet.
How old are you, Chris?
I'm 70.
Hmm.
And the last tour that we did was 80 shows. And to do that was mentally difficult, being on the stage every night, being in a band, being away from home. And physically, it really took it out of me. I had to sort of really take time out afterwards.
Wow.
But, you know, I'm really excited to get back out on the road again, so I don't know what that's all about.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about either. I think maybe you need to get John Oates in your band. I try and change things up a lot, too, to keep it interesting.
Yeah.
So, for example, now I flip between bass and guitar on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And that keeps it really interesting for me because as the co-writer of all the songs, I know where the energy lies. And I've figured out that at least in my world, that the bass guitar is kind of a leader of the band.
Mm-hmm.
And the bass sort of sets the tone for how the song's going to move. And so in certain songs where I think it requires that mentality, I switch to bass.
Yeah, I guess kind of hear that.
I also really like the idea of where you start thinking, you probably had this on a million times on stage, at least I have. You start thinking about something else. You're singing a song and you're actually thinking about that person over there, or you.
Mm-hmm.
I know my mind is capable of doing two things, of mm-hmm. rocking my head and rubbing my tummy, but I don't necessarily want to be doing it while I'm singing, mm-hmm. but it does happen. And so in order to avoid that from happening, I try and change things up on stage so that I don't allow myself that divergence.
That's great advice. Wow.
You know, so challenging yourself musically is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's very easy just to start going back into the, oh, I know exactly where, I don't even have to look at my hands anymore. I can just, you know,
yeah.
I know where I'm going. And, but if you change up the instrument, suddenly you do have to look and see what you're doing. And, or it's just like adding another song to the set or
yeah,
switching the set around so it doesn't have the same, you know, momentum. Because if you do things like that, it changes how you form.
Yeah, it becomes like theater.
Precisely.
Yeah. But being in a band is different for you because you're Brian Adams and you're leading the band. So you can choose what you play and what songs you play. When you're in a band, it's a kind of a democracy where you have to go with what your partner wants. And it becomes theater. But in a way, there's security in that.
Yeah, but you never want it to be complacent.
No, never, no. No. One of the things that I was really stunned by was seeing your photography.
Really?
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant.
Occasionally I get it right, you know.
Everybody's a photographer. I remember talking to Chalky Davis about it, and he said he was giving up photography because the iPhone came out. And ironically, he was the guy that photographed the iPhone for Apple when it first came out.
Well, that's a bit sad because so many photographers now do professional photographs on iPhones.
Yeah. Have you done that?
I have.
Is there an app you use or is you just use the app? No, you don't. Well,
is on your phone, you change your resolution from, I'll show you, on the phone up here.
Yeah.
There's a little button that you can press that goes into RAW state.
Oh, okay.
Press that button and turn your phone to RAW, bigger file, and then much more resolution so that it'll print on page properly and reproduce properly, or if you need to work on the photograph, you have the latitude to do it. So, yeah.
And what photographers inspire you or inspired you?
Oh, well, I was inspired mostly by the sort of New York photographers like Avedon and Penn, and I aspired to their photography. Herb Ritz, he was LA, but I liked that simplicity and technical, you know, particularly Penn, his technical prowess was second to none. But of course, you can always aspire to be, you know, inspired by somebody.
Yeah.
And in the end, it's going to be your eye that does the work.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember flying over to America on probably our first tour, maybe our second tour, and I sat next to a lady and she asked me what I did, and I asked her what she did. We got in a conversation. She was an agent for a photographer's.
Katie Barker.
I can't remember her name now, but she looked after this lady and she said, have you ever heard of her? She taught Diane Arbus. And
okay.
I said, well, if she taught Diane Arbus, she's got to be a cracking person. I'd love to meet her. So 2 days later, I met up with her and I went round to Lisette Modell's house.
Wow.
And we walked the dogs and we became friends and I got my book signed. And her photography is very simple too, but it's, you know, Count Basie, it's Ella Fitzgerald, it's kind of a time.
Did she take your photograph?
No, God, well, that would have been amazing.
Yeah.
She was old and I didn't have the bottle to ask. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Yeah. What about you? Who would you like to be photographed by? Or who do you like being photographed by?
Well, I don't really like being photographed.
Right.
oh, dear. But there's a zillion great photographers out there. I like Hedy Slimane. His work's great. Probably Hedy.
Why do you not like being photographed? You're a very...
Only because I don't... It's like photographing a toad. It's, you know... Just always looked like a toad.
Some toad.
Yeah.
It is kind of an odd thing to be photographed. I agree. It's kind of like...
Sometimes people really get it and they do a good job. But, for example, I use this app called PicDrop. And we get photographed every night by different photographers. And what we do is we get them to upload all their photographs onto PicDrop so that we can approve a bunch of them for their publication or whatever. And out of hundreds of photographers that have done it, only one photographer, I saw her work and I was like, she's got something special. let's get her to work with us, you know. Mm. And I can't explain it other than once I met her and I asked her, so how are you working? Like, what are you using? She said, oh, well, I use these old Russian lenses. Mm. I was like, oh, okay. And what she does is she has a regular digital camera where she fits these really old Russian lenses onto it, and sometimes not completely on, just loosely on. And by doing that, it makes the light sensor pick up refraction. Mm. So you don't get a crystal clear photograph. You get light source coming in, you get flare, and then you get an image which is slightly distorted. And it's like, it's just so clever.
That is really astounding, isn't it?
And so you do hundreds of people that have come through. There was one other guy, a Portuguese photographer that I really liked as well. Mm. It just shows you that a lot of people just do the job. And then they're like, I've only got a few songs to do this. I've got to make this interesting. How do I make it interesting?
Yeah, absolutely. So you duetted with so many people. You're a very lucky man. What is the gift?
Get in there and let it rip. I mean, I think that's the key. Just go out and do it. Even some of the early duets that I did, like working with Tina Turner, she was full of confidence too. I mean,
it's the confidence and the commitment that works.
Yeah, I don't know. I did a funny duet with Luciano Pavarotti once back in the 90s. He had this show called Pavarotti and Friends. We invite all these people to come down and eat spaghetti. And I thought it was a joke. The phone rang and it was Luciano. And he said, hello, I would like to speak to Brian Adams. I'm like, yeah, right. Who is this? He goes, I am Luciano. I'm like, yeah, right. No. You call back and you say, I am Luciano. That was a great thing to do. I don't know what made me think it was smart to sing in Neapolitan when I don't speak Italian, but I gave it a soldier's go. And it was one of the most memorable and funny experiences of my life, working with him.
Yeah.
It was just fantastic.
I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, and maybe you felt the same way, that the music industry was everything that you wanted to be part of, and you would sign anything to get a deal so you could be in a band and, you know, meet girls and do the touring and all the rest of it. What do you think of the industry now? Does it mean as much, do you think?
I mean, you're either a creative or you're a burglar.
A burglar? You know? Wow, I love that.
Yeah, so I don't know what I think of the music business, but I think there's a lot of really great creative people out there that are doing amazing work.
That work for record companies?
Maybe there's some creatives in there. But, I mean, the spectrum of artists out there right now is astonishing.
Oh, it's huge. Mm. I mean, you know, the Glastonbury Festival here in the UK.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the arc of people that are playing there, it's just mind-blowing, really.
I know.
The fact that you've got Neil Young on one end, and then you've got like a 14-year-old, 15-year-old girl from Bristol or Reading singing her heart out.
It's very clever.
Extraordinary.
I love that Lola Young. I think she's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you know her?
She was good enough to appear on this very podcast 2 or 3 years ago.
Wow.
So it's really fantastic to see her doing so well.
I'm so messy. It's so brilliant. So there are a lot of youngsters out there doing really great work.
Yeah. When I was thinking about us having a conversation, I thought I might be right in thinking that you might have lived in Church Street in London at one point.
Close to, but not on Church Street, no. I think that was too highbrow. I was more World's End.
Oh, okay. On Church Street, there used to be a studio there, and I just wondered whether you were aware of that.
Are you an actual recording studio?
Yeah, it's where Nick Drake recorded his albums.
Oh, I didn't know that, no. Yeah. On Old Church Street.
Yeah, it was owned by John Wood, who is a fantastic engineer. He recorded Nick Drake's records, John Cale, Nico, and he did our first 3 albums, one with John Cale, which was extraordinary.
In that studio?
In that place, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, no. Was it towards the river or just up from the river towards Fulham Road?
It was towards the river, just by a church. That's all I remember about it. I remember the pub across the street, of course.
Yeah. I know exactly where. I don't know where the studio is. Is it still there?
No. Where do you like to record? Do you record from home or do you like to go places?
Between the laptop and the studio.
So you have your own place?
Yeah. And I've had that for 30 years.
Do you like being there or do you hate being there?
Absolutely love being there.
Wow.
It's everything. It's the oldest building in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be like an old city hall. It just looks like one of those New York brownstones.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I saved it from being demolished back in the 80s because I needed a space. It was quite reasonably priced. And I thought, oh, this would be a good thing. And then built the studio. It took me for years and years and years to build it. But once I had it, it was just the place to go. And it's become a little bit of an institution there now,
mm-hmm.
because there's no place like it, really.
Mm-hmm.
I have the old Air Studios Neve console in there.
Oh, God, how beautiful.
Yeah. It went from Air to Atlantic, from Atlantic to L.A., and then from L.A. up to me.
It was meant to be.
Yeah. I recorded Joe Cocker on that desk in Atlantic
mm-hmm.
back in the 80s. So it was pretty cool to see it come back. Chris Thomas made all his early albums on that desk.
Yeah, I worked with Chris a couple of years ago. What a grumpy man he was. I enjoyed it, though.
Oh. Oh, the grumpiest, but the best.
Absolutely the best, absolutely. He didn't want to do it. It was extraordinary. But I had my own places to record as well. It went for about 15 years, and it was had a Helios desk.
Okay, yeah.
And it came from Basing Street in London. And it was an incredible sound. It was very, very, it was hard work.
You still have it?
No, my ex has got had the bones of it, and then she sold it to an Indian guy who lives in New Jersey.
Okay.
So it's got a good home.
That's all right, then.
That's all right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's changed. I mean, I remember we went to Jamaica and recorded there, and I brought all this equipment down with me.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a mobile studio. And nowadays, you just don't need to do that anymore. It's just
you don't.
48 track, yeah, you know, wacky desk, you know, all this outboard gear. Now it's all, you know, literally on your laptop. It's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Brian, I want to thank you for supporting Help Musicians podcast. It means the world to them and to me that you took the time to...
Nice to talk to you.
...have a chat.
Good luck with your tour with John Oates. And, I'll be there, man.
Thank you so much. I'm going to make that happen.
Yeah.
Hopefully our paths will cross one day. I'll come see you play.
I would love that, Chris. Where are you? Are you based in London?
No, I live on the south coast near Brighton.
Oh, do you?
And occasionally Glastonbury. So, yeah.
Ah, okay. Well, I'd love to see you sometime. And
okay.
Actually, we've got a history which goes back, obviously, because we both were on A&M Records.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, A&M Records in the day was an important record label.
So we could talk about that in another time.
Yeah, let's do that.
I can tell you all my stories about that.
So can I. Okay, see you soon.
See you guys. Cheers.
Bye. Bye. Well, that was a really good way to start off the fifth series, I have to say. Lovely talking to Brian, and to get tips on how to use your iPhone camera, I thought was extremely useful. And the fact that he swaps between guitar and bass just to keep things different on stage. Unfortunately, I can't do that. I did play bass originally when I started out, but I don't think I could do it now. Squeeze have got an amazing bass player anyway. I also got to share my Lisette Modell story with him, a photographer that I absolutely adored. So, Brian, thank you for your time. It was wonderful to speak with you. If you want to know more about the amazing work that Help Musicians does, then take a look at their website, follow them on social media like I do, and please consider donating a little money to the charity. They do incredible work supporting musicians of all types across the UK, changing people's lives for the better. And don't forget, I'm taking your questions about anything music-wise, from writing, recording, touring, and everything in between. Your well-being, maybe. Send your questions to chris@helpmusicians.org.uk. That's chris@helpmusicians.org.uk. And please subscribe to the podcast. It makes all the difference. Keep coming back. I Never Thought It Would Happen is a Gimme Sugar production for Help Musicians.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look amazing. What have you been doing?
You've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, if you qualify, Zelthy providers can prescribe semaglutide, the same active ingredient, at up to 90% less without insurance. Done all online.
No wait at the doctor's office or pharmacy?
No wait. Zelthy can ship the same active ingredients as other expensive GLP-1s to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less. That's #250 keyword care.